Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Hello, friends. Welcome back to the show. I got a great guest for you today. Dr. Paul Toomey's a surgeon, an oncologic surgeon, a general surgeon, and his hill to die on is helping support rural and private practices with their hiring and their culture and making sure that people who are working in these extraordinarily difficult, oftentimes stressful settings are there for the people in the waiting room who just want to get great care and have personalized conversations and feel seen as people and not data and not biology. This guy reached out to me cold call on LinkedIn. I fell in love with what he's working on, and he started a company called Ring of Hires, which is like a matchmaker for medical practices to find people that are looking for positions just like these and to vet them and give them like a soft landing into great jobs. We went through the obvious shenanigans. We're like, how'd you get into surgery? What's your favorite organ? Ha, ha, ha. And, you know, you're saving lives every day. The fleeing to private practice from the chokeholds of the system, the pandemic, burnout, and suicide. Like, really serious conversations. But this man is in the thick of it. He also is married to an OBGYN, so medicine's in his entire family's DNA. And there's a quick Easter egg about why the hell are we still using fax machines. Enjoy the show. Dr. Paul Toomey, welcome to Out of Patients.
Well, thank you so much, Matthew.
You know, I have a penchant for people that name things after stores in the mall and The Simpsons. So, Ring of Hires, you had me at hello on your LinkedIn hello.
Well, you know, it's more about Ring of Fires and Johnny Cash, isn't it?
Of course. I mean, anyone that channels the I've Been Everywhere guy.
But yeah, I hadn't thought too much of The Simpsons.
Well, it's like the Leftorium and the Tooth Be Told dentistry. Like, every story in The Simpsons is like a funny idiom, and this is perfect.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, before we get into all of that, I wanted to ask you the question I ask all people that claim to be doctors on my show is, are you the kind of doctor that when someone on an airline says, is there a doctor in the house, you can help?
Well, I have a recent story about this one. So I have two daughters. They're 8 and 11, Savannah and Madeline. And my wife is also a physician, OBGYN. So we were flying, this wasn't too long ago, maybe a few months ago. And the way it works is because there's four of us, the three of them sit next to each other and I sit in front of them. And someone announced while I was watching a movie, is there a doctor on board? No, they weren't in a lot of distress. It seemed like it was kind of a routine thing. But nonetheless, I paused for a second. I'm like, I don't know if I want to answer. But within a few seconds, my older daughter, Savannah, taps me on the shoulder and say, hey, Dad, they're calling for a doctor. So I didn't have a choice even to not respond. So my wife and I went and responded. And it was a guy that was throwing up on the plane. So my wife was being a doctor and asking doctor questions like, do you have any past medical history, any medical problems we need to know about? Whereas I turned to the flight attendants and I say, hey, do you guys have any towels so I can help them clean up? Mine was more of a practical stance of, hey, this guy's healthy. I can tell he's not sick, like chronically. He's just, you know, under the weather today, it looks like. So he was just fine, and everybody was very gracious, and it was very nice in the end. And I guess I'll have to just jump up from now on, because either way, my daughter's going to sell me out.
Yeah, you were outed. totally outed by your daughter. My dad's a doctor. Yeah, yeah. I've had lots of people on the show that talk about how, you know, they're a PhD in, you know, whatever it is, like, you know, music or something. And, oh, Not That Kind of Doctor is like the name of their show. Sorry, Not That Kind of Doctor.
No, I am that kind of doctor. I'm a general surgeon. So, you know, I did operations this morning and I operate very frequently, very high volume practice. And my wife, who's an OBGYN, is now retired, believe it or not, after, you know, 10 years of practicing. So it's kind of an interesting time for us and we're very happy and blessed.
Being a surgeon is no small potatoes. That takes a lot of time and training, and you know, people's lives are in your hands. How does it feel to, I don't know, have you ever held someone's organ in your hand and say,
I don't think I had the evil laugh, you know, I have had my students, for instance, I take pictures of them with an organ in their hands so that they can send to their mom, you know, whatever pathology you were sending to the pathologist. After a while, it's just what we do, right? And so it's we try to have fun with it, you know, try to you know, make every day special for the patients. You know, every day, what's interesting is being a doctor is that, you know, we're used to this, but your patient, they're not used to it. And if you're ever on that side, and I have been a patient before, you realize how nerve-wracking it is, and it's very novel to you, and you don't know what's going to come. So I get to appreciate both sides for sure.
I just remember after my neurosurgery back in 1996, he came to visit me in the hospital after I was out of the NICU. And my first words to him were, "You touched my brain."
Now, what type of cancer did you have?
I had something called a medulloblastoma. It's a pediatric neuroendocrine tumor, congenital. And it started to present symptoms when I was 21, which is rare for that particular pathology to affect someone like 10 years after it normally presents.
Yeah. Well, too bad they didn't keep you awake and start touching different things. I smell that. Or, you know, have you ever seen those shows?
I've seen those shows like guys are playing guitar during open brain surgery. And like, this one made the chord minor and this one made him sound like Hendrix. And this one is crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why surgery? That's the most intense Hippocrates ever.
I had a bet with someone in high school that we both wanted to be neurosurgeons at the time, and we both wanted to go to Duke for undergrad. I went to Duke undergrad, and I became a general surgeon. She went to Clemson and became an architect. So I think I won that bet. You know, it's just a matter of I've done well in school, you know, growing up, and I always wanted to do something with my hands, something physical, not just mental. You know, I like computer programming. I did a lot of that, you know, growing up, but it didn't have the same satisfaction of doing something physically. So I knew I wanted to do something physical. But when you do training, you try to see if any of the types of subspecialties fit, and just general surgery was the right fit for me.
Well, you didn't just win against your friend, you won against me, because I went to undergraduate in biomedical engineering.
Oh yeah, me too.
And I was in a 5-year master's program, and honestly, organic chemistry 3 done me in at 7 a.m. at the lecture hall. Yeah, I can't. It was like the litmus test of which kids are really serious about this degree. I admire you for keeping on for those, your version of those 7 a.m. organic chemistry classes.
Yeah, definitely it's a weed out class, whether it's Orgo 1 or Orgo 2, both of them are terrible. It's a necessary step just to get through.
Another question I'd like to ask my medical professional friends is, how long did it take you to get immune to formaldehyde?
I don't think I'm immune to it yet. You know, whenever you... you know, at least in my training, we did have a cadaver lab, and I don't think I ever really got used to it there. You know, I see formaldehyde almost every day when they're putting the specimen in it, but I don't have to smell it, luckily. But I don't think I'm still used to it.
What was that movie where, was it Revenge of the Nerds or Ferris Bueller, where they go into the anatomy lab and the professor's like just plucking organs out of this guy's body?
I don't remember in Ferris Bueller, that's for sure. But yeah, it's the Cadaver Lab is, you know, they're doing a lot of virtual ones these days, but it is, it's very eerie. And I'll tell you, even more eerie is when I had to do my trauma cadaver where it's just a torso. That's really freaky.
Just like a limbless body.
Yeah, just a limbless body, and then the neurosurgeons get the head. Oh, and it's just, it's a little freaky. So I didn't mind the cadaver lab nearly as much in medical school, where it's the entire body, but it was odd for just a torso.
So I'm going to attempt to pronounce a word I've never said in my entire life. And you know what word this is. So listeners, prepare yourself. I'm going to botch this on purpose. Hepatopancreatobiliary.
Yeah, hepatopancreatobiliary surgeon. Yeah. So when I did my training, you know, I did a fellowship, and it was in minimally invasive surgery, robotics, single site operations, and then also hepatopancreatobiliary, which rolls off my tongue because I just say it a lot. But and so that just means pretty advanced liver and pancreatic operations, you know, that you really do need extra training for. And so, yeah, it's an easy word once you say it a few hundred times.
I also have here something called advanced foregut laparoscopic and robotic surgery.
Yeah. So I'm currently the president of the Society of Laparoscopic and Robotic Surgery, the SLS. And I do a lot of foregut, which just means kind of the upper abdominal stuff, you know, gallbladders, stomach, and things like that. So, and I'm big on the robot these days. You know, I've done about 800 robotic cases to date. So over the last 8 years. So we have a fellowship. We have two fellows that just started. Guess what? August 1st, you know, is the start date. So it's a brand new year cycle for us, and it's exciting time every time we get new fellows.
All right. So 101 me on robotic surgery. I think I'm aware of what this is. Did they give you like ColecoVision joysticks or Nintendo joysticks? How does it work?
Well, it does help that I am of the age of Nintendo, and I still play Call of Duty with my wife. So you sit next to the patient, and I sit in a console, and I attach to the patient the robotic arms. And so it's I'll back up. What's laparoscopic and what's robotic? Because I don't think many people know. Laparoscopic is we're operating through little tiny incisions with long chopsticks. And so what's good about the robot is it gives you wrist action on the inside, and I get 3D vision because I get a camera for each eye, and I sit next to you and the robot does all the work instead of me standing next to you and doing the laparoscopic stuff. But so I still do laparoscopic in certain times, and I wouldn't call myself, I don't like to call myself a robotic surgeon. I'm a laparoscopic and robotic surgeon because there are times that one is better than the other. But that's what we try to teach our fellows is it's finishing school for laparoscopic and robotic surgery.
Right. And just for sake of insurance and malpractice, at no point does AI come in and tell you what to do.
Not yet. No, there's two things that are missing in the robot. One is a coffee cup holder, and two is a automatic pilot. We don't have those yet.
So wait, does that mean you've dropped a Junior Mint into somebody once?
No, I'm over next to him, so I don't have to drop it in him.
You could just manually toss it in on purpose then.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely.
So I would imagine again, with my limited knowledge of how the body is inside the skin, which is messy, I learned that not the organs aren't really colored like they show you in the books. Is that true?
That is true. You know, there are some color differences, and it takes many years to see little subtle differences too. But it's not you know, paint by color for sure.
Yeah, and just like I'm in awe of surgery specifically, because I'm a survivor of brain surgery. The level of intricacies and what you have to go through for prep. Can you talk just through the actual day-to-day? Like, you're preparing to go inside somebody and save their life and fix things. So much can go wrong, robots notwithstanding, perhaps. What is that experience? How do you prepare for that?
You know, it's just experience. The more you do, the more you become comfortable. So, you know, our training is very long in general surgery. It's a 5-year program, you know, nationwide, which is different in other nations. But for the United States, it's pretty long. Now, with the 80-hour work week restrictions, it seems like most people are not completely prepared to go out in the real world until they do a fellowship. So it's almost an extended residency and fellowship these days of 6 to 7 years of training. So after your training, you know, you're ready to go, but you get so comfortable doing this that it just becomes second nature, and your skills, you know, it's just kind of built into us at this point.
All right. So sheer armchair curiosity, what types of surgeries do you perform for what conditions?
So as a general surgeon, we pretty much do anything in the abdomen, skin, breast. There are a whole plethora of other ones that we could do. It just depends on your training and what your local region does. But we even do colonoscopies and endoscopies in certain areas. But for me personally, what I typically do is cancer operations, like breast cancer, colon cancer, melanoma, and then I do a lot of benign disease, like gallbladder disease, inguinal hernias, umbilical hernias, things of that nature. But as general surgeons, we have a wide array of operations that we're skilled at.
So there's a running joke in the cancer world, the dark comedy side of this is, how many organs can you live without so you don't get cancer in them?
Well, there are plenty of double organs that we have, you know, so you can, believe it or not, you can live without a pancreas, but it's not advised. And you can live obviously with any organ that there's two of, like your kidneys and your lungs, you can live without one of those.
Yeah, like what? Let's just live without them, and 50% risk of both getting sick. God, it's such an odd prevention, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty invasive to do that. Yeah.
All right. So do you have like a guilty pleasure organ? I'm just that sounded terrible to say that out of my mouth. But like, do you have like a particular favorite procedure?
Oh, I'm asked this a decent amount of times. I would say I like the wide array that we get in general surgery. You know, some operation like cardiothoracic surgeons, they have to become really skilled at bypass and valves. So they don't have a wide array. Whereas general surgeons, we're doing so many different things. The main thing is I like minimally invasive operations and I like bigger operations. And so what's good is I can kind of mix and match. So I have some, you know, like one or two big operations in a day and a whole bunch of small operations. And so that's just fun. Just to mix it up for me.
And just to wrap up before the break, you're saving people's lives. I've had this conversation many times. How hard is it to reconcile that? Or have you, you've been doing this a long time now. You are holding someone's life in your hands and then they walk away and their life exists because of you.
I think we all don't take it lightly that what we do can be life-saving, but you know, it's part of my job. That's why I'm here. This is what I've always been trained to do. I don't think of myself as saving lives all the time, even though this is a common theme of what we do, but certainly, it's a humbling experience every time that someone's really truly sick and might not make it.
All right. So after the break, listeners, we're going to talk about Paul's work in burnout, you know, the diaspora of doctors, the challenges facing modern day people working in the industry. And I can't believe I said guilty pleasure organ, but I'm going to name the show that. Well, so we'll be right back after these words from the Guilty Pleasure Organ Foundation.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah, Paul, let's get to the root of today's issues. And it's, you know, the pandemic, if anything, revealed so many things. But I mean, the fact that medical professionals were killing themselves, like, it seems unimaginable that that would have happened. But then you peel back the onion and you realize, yes, the whole system is completely set up to make you, like, impossible to practice well and have a life.
Yeah, you know, we get a lot of burden with medical documentation and the business of medicine. If you're in the private practice world, like I am, in addition to all the patient care that we do. So definitely burnout is real, and it's it was especially trying, I'm sure, during COVID for a lot of different physicians. And so you know, that's, you know, part of the reason that I started Ring of Hires is that we were sitting around and I was talking to my office manager. I said, "Hey Scott, weren't we going to hire someone like 6 months ago? And this is 2021. So it's after, you know, during COVID stuff." And he's like, "Yeah, I keep putting it on. I post it, but you know, I'm not getting that much." And so in Florida, there's a lot of real estate, or if you're, and so when you're looking at real estate, what do? You look on Zillow or Redfin and you are on a map. And so what I found was, the current system of hiring for medical practices like ours is all about, these lists. And you're old enough to remember the classifieds. Well, I am too.
Oh, yes.
And they are all modern classifieds that are on there. So if you post your job today, by tomorrow, your job's on the second, third, fourth page, whether you're medicine or not. But in the medical world, we get a lot of turnover in our offices. And so hiring is a big deal, and it just detracts from patient care. And then guess what? If you don't have enough people, people are leaving messages that aren't getting called back, and they're upset because their operation hasn't been scheduled on time. And so there's so many facets to hiring and medical practices that I wanted to come up with a solution for. And so I made a map-based solution, Ring of Hires. And so now you can just go on a map essentially and see all the people that want a job, but then also all the medical jobs in the U.S., and it's specifically tailored to medical practices because we just don't have any solution like this. There's nothing tailored for us.
So is this really for anyone in the medical profession, or like out of med school, they place you? I want to know how people are aware of this to take advantage of it.
Yeah. So whether you're job seeking or an employer, it's for you. It's really the matchmaker for medical practices. And so if you're coming out of training, this is the site for you. You can look all over the nation for any type of medical job. You know, my focus over the next 3 to 6 months is really small medical practices, the other Paul Toomeys of the world, because, you know, there's 200,000 medical practices like mine across the U.S. And much like the economy, the backbone is the small businesses. The small medical practices are kind of like the backbone of the medical community in the U.S. And so that's my focus, is to make it so that small practices are much better, because, you know, patients prefer small practices because they get more time with their physicians. They get their phone calls answered a little bit more quickly. Their waiting times are not as bad. And so we really need to save the small medical practices in the U.S. and not just become all big systems.
Well, it reeks of the parallels with the local pharmacist conundrum too.
So tell me more your thoughts on it.
Well, I mean, there's a different level of trust. There's a different level of, like, you know, the bartender knows your name when you get there. They can be a little more intimate in getting to know you and not just what's wrong with you per se. Am I on track with this?
Yeah. So pharmacy specifically is also on there. And it's funny you say that because, yeah, we have a local one that they will, you know, they're right down the street from my office and they deliver my wife's medication to my office, which, you know, I'm like, why are you making me get your medication? But, you know, whatever. But the small pharmacists are, you know, like they really do get to know you by even first name and basis. So it's a very interesting dynamic with small practices, small pharmacists. We've got surgery centers. We've got, you know, all these smaller entities. You know, the patients really get a heartfelt feel whenever they talk to the people there.
Has there really been a boom in private practice because a lot of medical professionals are fleeing the big systems that are kind of like chokeholding them?
You know, it's an interesting dynamic because if you read the news, the trend is the opposite way. You know, we start out with, you know, our 5 years of training and we finish all that. And guess what? How much business of medicine we get? None. And so it's very hard, most people think, to start a medical practice. So there are a lot of people going to the hospitals who are more than willing to hire people now. But what I'm seeing is that they're there short-lived. It's usually a couple-year contract, and then they leave, and then someone else comes. And so if you really want like a stable surgeon in an area, it seems like, at least here locally, the medical practices are the way to go that are smaller, that you can kind of manage yourself.
So what are some of the classified ads? I'll just go back to being old, you know, that you run. Like, what are the types of jobs that you're helping these practices to fill?
Yeah. So, you know, in my practice, the main thing is, you know, we have front desk, back desk, receptionists. We have medical coder billers. We have medical assistants. There's nurse practitioners, physician assistants. Even the surgeons can be found here. So it's the entire practice. And the main thing for us is it's not just about hiring, but it's also making your office happy. You know, if your office is happy, you have pleasant patients because it all runs down to them. And so we've created also something called Campfire, and it's built off of AI, but it's an automated process that – have you ever heard of state interviews?
No, I've not. Tell me more.
So big corporations, every quarter or end of the year, instead of just exit interviews, they'll do what are called state interviews. And it's essentially open-ended questions like – what makes you come to work today? Or, you know, what's the most mundane thing that you do at work that you wish you never had to do again? You know, it's really getting a feel of where they are in their practice or in their corporation, and whether they're going to be there long term, or if this is a short term, or if there's some sort of intervention we can do. So we've created an automated process that will do that, not quarterly, more like once every couple weeks. Just feeling out your practice, getting the pulse of your practice. And we call it Campfire for a reason, because you think of a campfire, like everybody's sitting around, everybody's warm, cozy, everybody's chatting. Like, that's how you want your practice to be. And so we can give marshmallows too, right? We can give attaboys to the practice that you can't as a physician sometimes. What's interesting is, I used to do this, and I didn't even know about state interviews. I used to do this with my staff, but the problem was is that I'm the boss man, right? So no one wants to tell you if there's a problem.
Right.
But what we built was we have an AI in the background, so it's completely anonymous now. And so there's not going to be any names. There's not going to be – it's just – it's trying to figure out, like, are you guys happy? Like, what's your happiness score in your office? And so it's a fun concept that we've been playing with. And so it's not just about hiring, but it's hiring people that stay and are happy.
Well, it also speaks to, you know, you go to the doctor – like, you're a regular Joe. You go to the doctor, and you forget that this is also customer service as well as medical care. So – one might not conflate corporate culture with a family practice, but that is really how do you keep the harmony, the morale. It sounds like this is helping to address that and hopefully keep it keep everything happy, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, in small practices, you're like a family. Like in any other small business, you really have this feel of, hey, this is my family away from home. And so patients feel that. They really understand that the front desk person is going to know them by name. They're going to walk them back personally. And it's not just a machine. And it truly is customer service. You know, what we do every single day is take care of the patients and they're our customers. You know, I'm there for them.
If you ask anyone what their most mundane chore is in a job like this, and they don't say unjamming the printer, they're not human.
Well, you know, like you got to flip up that one little panel and grab it out and pull, you know, it's such a pain, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think there are some other mundane things, but let's go back to the organ that you were talking about. Which one's your favorite?
Yeah. Right. I'm a big fan of the appendix because you don't need it. And it's also called an appendix.
Yeah, I do like the appendix because I like taking it out because it doesn't take long and it cures the problem. They feel so much better right after. So I do like taking out an appendix, that's for sure.
All right, I have a Gen X softball question for you. Why the hell are there still fax machines?
Oh, good question. You know, there are like virtual fax machines, so I don't understand why we have to live in this, but they're just – there's too many antiquated processes that are still tied to it. And I don't have the answer to that one. I wish we could get rid of the fax machine for sure. Well, I did get rid of beepers in my practice.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, the drug deals kind of faded that when cocaine went away.
So. Wait, cocaine's still around. I just had a patient that was positive.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Not plugging cocaine, folks. But, hey,
here to stay,
I suppose.
No, I can't operate. I don't like it.
No. I want to talk about some of the successes you've found because, you know, you saw a problem, you're building something to solve it. Give me some examples. Where's it working? What are the challenges that you've revealed by solving for this in the way you have?
Well, let's talk about the pain first, and that's the problems that we're doing. So it used to be, okay, I post my job and I'm not getting that many things. You know, like what you talk to your office about, I'm not getting that many applicants. Well, finally get some applicants. Okay. Well, they're not qualified. Okay. And then they're qualified. Okay. Now let's make it so that they'll interview and then less than 50% show up. And I don't know why I don't think in our generation this happened, but there's a lot of no shows and no calls. Like people won't show up for interviews, but they don't even call to say that they're not going to show up, which is baffling to me. Like I would never do that. And then now they finally interview. And they ask for too much money, even though it said something else. And then, okay, well, they're finally qualified. They ask for the right amount of money. We get them hired, and then they last a week, and then they go away. And then, okay, now we get them. They're hired. They're there for a while. And this just happened a few weeks ago. My staff tells me this one employee is watching Netflix on her phone during office hours. So there's so many parts of this process that gum up the system, and we've been able to streamline all of that. So now you can schedule all the interviewing straight through the platform. You can, I've had 100% interview rate on everybody that I've done through the platform. I just had my first hire because we just launched the 2.0 version just last month, and I had my first hire through here. So the entire process is now just an easy button for hiring, and that's the whole point. We just want to make it so ridiculously easy to hire that you don't have to think about that anymore. Instead, you can just take care of your patients. That's all we really want to do. We want to come in, take care of our patients, make sure that everybody's happy and healthy, and go home. You know, and so that's what it's about.
Yeah, and that none of the chairs are squeaky and annoy people in the waiting room.
Yeah, so usually you put the TV on so they can't hear that, Matthew.
So what Ring of Hires, what's the website?
Yeah, ringofhires.com.
Again, Simpsons Mall, best name ever. All right. Paul Toomey is the CEO of the Florida Surgical Specialists and the CEO of Ring of Hires. I'm really impressed with what you've done. I don't think anyone hasn't been in a waiting room with a staff that is just like, you know, like pushing paper and not happy to be there. And, you know, in the smaller practices, you really do need that personal touch, and it's important to have morale and smiles, even when it's a bad day. I just remember the ratemydoctor.com crapness from the 2000s. And, you know, the doctors were rated poorly because the wait time was too long. That's not the reason to rate the doctor poorly. So I think you're onto some amazing things, and I'm excited to have introduced you to my audience. So thank you so much for hitting me up on LinkedIn and making this connection.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Dr. Paul Toomey, folks, we'll see you next time on Out of Patience. Take care. Out of Patience with Matthew Zachary is an Off-Script Health production. The executive producers are Matthew Zachary and Andrew McDowell. It's mixed and edited by Kyle Moore. If you like the show, ratings and reviews are always welcome. Leave us a message anytime at 855-AUDIO-66. That's 855-AUDIO-66 to share your healthcare shitness with us, and we might just play them on the air on a future episode. For more information about this show and Off-Script Health, visit offscript.com. That's offscript, no T, .com.